A lot of fuss over a baby bear attack. I don't even remember.
Be glad you don't remember. It ravaged and tossed your naked body into the shrubs, and that baby bear is still out there.
We didn't have to leave town. It wasn't gonna follow me home.
Not right away, but wait 29 days.
What happens in 29 days?
Oh, hey, I didn't see you there. Welcome to the podcast. I'm actually out in the middle of this spooky graveyard at midnight during a full moon. We had this idea, well, half an idea, you know, since it's our Halloween special. We've come out here and I don't know, we got separated. Now I'm just trying to find everybody and get out of here. Oh, my name's Stuart, by the way. Joe, are you here?
Hey, Stuart.
Oh, there you are. I didn't see you there. Did you find the gravestone of Al Lewis?
No, but I did find Joan Rivers's.
Oh. Does it say anything? Is there an epithet?
It just says bitch.
Oh, jeez. Have you seen Brad so we can get out of this creepy place?
No, I haven't. Brad?
Brad, are you here?
I am here.
Oh, jeez, Brad, you scared me to death.
Yes.
Did you find the tomb of Fred Gwynn?
No, I was not able to find the tomb of Fred Gwynn, but I found the tomb of Bryan Singer's career.
Oh, God. This is a fucked up cemetery. Oh, great. Now it's starting to rain. Let's just duck in this mausoleum. Oh, God. Well, while we wait for the storm to clear, I guess we could talk about Mockingbird Lane.
It's so nice to get out of the cold and talk to some goblin ghoul sounds.
So, Brad, are you gonna keep up that voice through the whole podcast?
No, the last thing I want to do is commit to a bit.
Well, anyway, I would say this is the first one of these that I have watched that's actually made me angry. Just the level of blatant disregard for the source material is just baffling.
I don't disagree with that. However, I gotta say, I'm not entirely sold on the idea that the source material had all that much value to begin with.
You gotta agree with you there, Brad.
Oh, really?
The Munsters is not the Addams Family. It is not a little subversive work of genius. It's kind of dull.
Thank you.
I was not expecting that.
Yeah, the only part of the show that I ever cared for was Al Lewis.
Oh, he was great.
Grandpa Munster himself.
There were things I thought was cool when I was a kid, sure. I mean, I liked the Stegosaurus that breathed fire and lived in the basement. That was cool.
That is cool, yeah.
But they didn't use that very often.
I'm shocked. I thought everybody loved the Munsters.
I have a soft spot in my heart for the Munsters, which is largely nostalgia-based. But I mean... I didn't think it was great art or anything. I mean, I liked the Munsters when I was a kid, but I don't think it's sacrosanct.
The other thing we've already brought up is the Munsters is inextricably linked with the Addams Family. Mm. They do what they wanna do, say what they wanna say, live how they wanna live, play how they
wanna play, dance how they wanna dance, kick and they snap a friend. Addams Family! That's right. Yeah.
Even though the similarities are only really surface level.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they're both just spooky themed shows.
And like, the family is unaware of how they appear to outsiders.
They ran at the same time.
Mm. Oh, did they really?
They premiered in the same week.
Wow.
The Addams Family, September 18th, 1964. The Munsters, September 24th, 1964. And they both ran for about 70 episodes and were both canceled less than a month apart in 1966.
So this is like the original Dante's Peak volcano situation. One studio gets word that another studio is working on a spooky TV show about a spooky family, and the other major studio has to do the same, huh?
I mean, their origins are completely different.
Yeah, yeah. Adam's Family was a comic
by Charles Adams that featured a family, but he never really gave them names or really fleshed out their personalities. But the comics were rich with wit and social commentary.
Yeah, they were great. I remember discovering those for the first time probably 7 or 8 years ago. Really blew my mind how subversive they were for the time.
Another thing that the Munsters have in common is, despite their appearances, they're both, in fact, highly functional families who are very loving and accepting and generous and gracious people.
All right, I'm starting to see where your issues with this reboot come from.
The genius of both shows is that the normal people that they encounter who jump to conclusions about the appearances of the Addams and the Munsters are the real monsters. The Addams family would like try and shove money in pocket of anybody that walked in their house.
That's true.
I mean, they were incredibly gracious and generous people, even though they thought that other outsiders were weird.
That is, I guess, the big bit is that they're weird, but they think everyone else is weird or whatever.
Which is a difference in this version, definitely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also important to remember that they premiered in 1964, which was right when the Civil Rights Act had happened. So that was like a huge backdrop.
Oh, interesting.
It's the perfect example of talking about something without actually talking about it.
Yeah.
Sure.
And also, The Munsters is based on Leave It to Beaver. I don't know if you guys realize that.
I did not know that, no.
That is fucked up.
It was actually created by the same team. The twist is, it's a family of classic Universal monsters from the movies of the 1930s. The Munsters was made in conjunction with Universal, so they had the rights to use everything from those movies, especially the makeup and the costumes by the legendary Jack Pierce, who was at the time working on Mr. Ed, which was the last gig he had before he died. Couldn't get him because he was already tied up with Mr. Ed. They went as deliberately close as they could to the 1930s as possible. It took them hours to apply and was extremely uncomfortable, especially Fred Gwynne's Frankenstein costume. It's literally the same costume that Boris Karloff wore.
But Grandpa's costume is also the same as Bela Lugosi's costume, although I don't know if it's exactly the same, but it's...
Oh, yeah.
I think it's pretty damn near close.
He's got that Romanian war medal.
Yeah.
Yeah, the little amulet that nobody's exactly sure why he's wearing it or where it came from.
Whereas the grandpa in this reboot is more of a Bram Stoker's Dracula kind of guy.
Yeah, and I'm kind of sad that they didn't play that up more, but especially his hair. They could have easily done some sort of homage to the Bram Stoker's Dracula, and it probably would have been way more interesting.
The big hair butt.
Yeah.
They could have done something.
They could have done exactly what Coppola did and bankrupt themselves trying to make this.
Yes, all in-camera practicals.
He had to sell his house from making Bram Stoker's Dracula. He was so deep in debt, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Also, I wanted to point out that in the original Munster show, Grandpa's lab was designed by the same guy that designed the 1931 Frankenstein lab, Kenneth Strickfaden.
I thought you were going to say that it was designed by Wernher von Braun. This is exactly like the laboratories we had back in Nazi Germany. What is that accent? Jesus fucking Christ.
Nay on the Nazi, nay, Werner.
Kenneth Strickfaden also worked on Young Frankenstein in 1974.
Huh.
Mel Brooks wanted to find the equipment that was actually in 1931 Frankenstein. Kenneth Strickfaden had it in his garage.
Wow.
They pulled it all out and plugged it in and it worked.
That is fucking awesome.
The stuff that's in Young Frankenstein is literally the same props from the original movie.
Hey,
wow.
When I read about this, I was like, well, why didn't the Munsters use that equipment? He didn't bring it up. I guess he got paid more to just build something new.
Yeah.
He didn't mention he had it in his garage.
Get paid, brother.
So Herman is the dad, the Frankenstein monster.
Yeah.
Played by extremely talented Fred Gwynne. Herman is an enormous child man who sleeps with a teddy bear.
One of the things that stuck with me from the Munsters watching it as a kid was just his little giggle. Yeah.
Yeah. He like jumps and claps his hands. Grandpa is the grandpa, and he is Dracula, and he's played by the also extremely talented Al Lewis.
The great Al Lewis.
Who would go on to play this role every time he could for the rest of his life.
Yes, including running for mayor.
Running for governor and running for Senate 2 years later for the Green Party.
I remember him suing to be allowed to put Grandpa Al Lewis as his name on the ballot.
Yeah, he thought it would be more recognizable. He was definitely right, yeah.
And he's right.
He still got over 55,000 votes, which I guess allowed the Green Party to remain on ballots for the next like 10 years or something. When you think about old men that grew up in that time period, you don't normally think of far left politics being their bag. I mean, you know, Borgnine was like a lifelong right wing Republican type guy, like most of those guys. And then here's Al Lewis.
He's a complete goofball though, complete ridiculous person. Best. You really had to hand it to the man. Anytime someone said, like, we'll give you some money to show up in the Dracula costume, he was there.
Yeah.
And in 1991, he appeared in a low-budget movie titled Grandpire.
Grandpire, my grandpa is a vampire.
I actually just watched that with my wife this afternoon. I can't say enough good things about Grandpire.
Oh my goodness.
If you're looking for a movie to add to your Halloween watch list, I would put Grandpire on there. The whole thing is on YouTube, but definitely like an early October Halloween watch.
Oh, I gotta see that.
It's a New Zealand film, right?
Yes. I think watching the credits, they used a grant from the government.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And you can tell that they had the money. The production is really good. The writing is terrible.
The music in the clip that you sent me was fantastic.
Yeah, the whole music is like synthesizer that kind of sounds like carnival music. It's really good. The whole movie is two little kids trying to hide Grandpa Munster. Like hiding him in like the back seats of cars and like putting funny disguises on him.
Yes, I have to see.
From 1987 to 1989, he hosted Super Scary Saturday on TBS.
Hello. It's me, Grandpa, and welcome to another monstrous edition of Super Scary Saturday. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then there is also a series of VHS tapes I think he hosted. So he did Grandpa Munster a lot.
There's the parody of him as Grandpa Munster hosting the Super Scary Saturday in Gremlins 2.
I had a note about that. Why didn't they just get Al Lewis?
No idea. He must have been too expensive.
I find that hard to believe.
Apparently he was very wealthy and lived in Switzerland.
Yeah.
Just bizarre.
He claimed he had $11 million and lived in Switzerland.
In 1987, yeah.
I have no reason to doubt Grandpa.
I don't either. I bet he got a nice little piece of syndication.
Who knows, man?
I mean, back then, you could probably get that being a bit player.
You just have to ask to be paid on the back end, I guess.
Stuart, that's how I'd like to be paid for this.
Sure. I'll let you know. In every interview that I saw of him, he brings up that the Munsters has
never been out of syndication in the United States. As you and I here are sitting, it's running in 41 countries of the world in their respective languages.
Maybe he did get paid in syndication, but it makes me wonder why he took all these parts when he was very old.
He was probably quite bored.
Have we said that him and Fred Gwynne are like 2 years apart?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Here's the thing about that. So Fred Gwynne was born in 1926. Al Lewis's official date of birth is in 1923. But he claimed up until he died that he was born in 1910.
Really?
And he was doing radio in the 30s. So if he was born in 23, he would have been quite young.
He did a show with Fred Gwynne before the Munsters called
Car 54, Where Are You?
Hell yes.
Another thing I would recommend. Every episode is up on Shoutcast Factory for free. Go pick a random episode. You will not be disappointed.
Oh yeah, I used to watch that.
I did too.
On Nick at Night.
Exactly. Nick at Night, man.
Nick at Night. A TV viewer's dream. No fuss, no happy perfume.
Just good television.
Put Nick at Night in your living room.
Al Lewis looks like an old man in that.
Yeah.
And that's like 1960.
So to think that he was only 37, that just doesn't track.
Some people are just, you know, they just look old forever.
We mentioned him running for office and everything, but he was a big Rockefeller drug law reform
guy.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he and his wife would actually go to prisons and hang out, talk, and mentor the inmates on activism and everything.
Uh-huh.
So he was literally trying to help some of the most marginalized people in the country before it was cool.
Wow. Grandpa Munster.
What a guy.
Another constellation in the piloting era. Oeuvre of gods.
But it's him. It's George Newbern.
He's a lesser saint. The rest of the cast, there's Eddie. He's a wolf boy. Butch Patrick.
You know, the original Munsters. Do we ever see him wolfing out?
You don't. But there was a test pilot that was like only 15 minutes long. And in that, Herman is married to a different woman named Phoebe. The producers were afraid people would see she was a ripoff of Morticia Adams. So they changed that. And Eddie was like running around terrorizing, and there was a lot of conflict in the family.
Huh.
You know, it made everybody not like Eddie, obviously. So they got rid of that.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
And then in this version, they put that back.
So all the characters are clearly based on universal monsters, except for Lily.
I thought she was supposed to be a vampire.
I don't think they ever really talked that much about it. She was a vampire by virtue of being Dracula's daughter.
Yeah.
But they never really had her do anything vampiric. And then I guess they never really had Grandpa do much that was all that vampiric to begin with.
I mean, it was always just sort of offhand comments. You just have to read between the lines, I guess. I did want to mention that Yvonne DiCarlo, and another enormous talent, huge star appearing in a plethora of Hollywood movies in the 1950s, and has two stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Oh, wow. Two.
And she said that she based Lily on Donna Reed.
Okay.
Right.
And lastly, the Munsters have a college-age niece who lived with them, Marilyn.
And she was the normal one.
Right, yeah. But the family believes she was born ugly and they actually pity her.
Weird.
But she also seems unaware of how unusual the rest of the family is and that she is different from them and is also confused by outsiders' reactions, just like they are. And one of the running jokes is that she'll bring home a boyfriend who is initially confused but intrigued by the house, but then will suddenly jump up and run away in a comical fashion once he meets one of the members of the family.
What happened? You told me this girl was such a doll.
Oh, Marilyn is. But that house, and the aunt, and the grandfather. Boy, they're like something out of Edgar Allan Poe.
Then the family consoles Marilyn because she's so ugly.
It must be either love or astigmatism.
Maybe she'll someday find a boyfriend who can accept her for her bad looks.
Yeah.
Which of us has not been there?
Yeah, I've spent most of my life there.
She's actually the most underdeveloped character in the whole show.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know. She seemed pretty developed to me.
It's also worth noting that the Addams Family are extremely wealthy, idle, rich aristocrats.
Yeah.
And Herman is a lunch pail guy. Yeah.
What does he do at the mortuary?
I don't know. We never see. I guess he digs graves. Mockingbird Lane is not the first full-blown Munsters TV show reboot.
That's right.
There was Munsters Today.
We're the Munsters!
We're the Munsters! Oh, yeah!
1991.
Ran for 3 seasons, 78 episodes, more than the original.
I remember I was turned off by the fact that everybody had the weird makeup.
Yeah, it's really terrible. Bad. In that show, they did a backdoor finale for the Munsters. Grandpa creates sleeping chambers and everybody falls asleep and Grandpa sets the dial for 30 minutes. Something happens and they end up in there for 22 years. And now not only are they the Munsters, but they also have to adjust to being in the 1980s.
Oh, God.
So it's like double fish out of water.
That is even worse than I imagined.
The classic cocaine television show idea. Bird brain inside all of their skulls.
So that brings us to Mockingbird Lane.
They aired this as a Halloween special in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And then for a little while thereafter, it was on Hulu.
Yeah.
Really?
I remember that part.
Hulu was like an NBC thing at the time.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I think before Disney bought them. They had like a whole bunch of just random NBC shit, and they put this on there for anyone to watch it. I mean, this is not some little cheap-ass
no
pilot
no,
that everybody's just going, oh, we're yeah, we fucked that up. We'll do better next time. They wanted this, but it just did not work.
The budget was $10 million.
Looking at it, you're like, wow, this looks fucking incredible. But God damn, is it fucking boring?
Yeah, it's stupid and boring. It was a lot easier doing research for this one, by the way, I want to say. Oh, like, sure. I didn't have to, like, go pull out microfiche.
Yeah.
I could just do a Google search.
Have you done that?
Well, I've used newspapers.com, which is basically the same thing.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah.
So this is from EW.com, June 4th, 2012, by James Hibbert. We want this show to be an American Harry Potter. Writer-producer Fuller recently told EW, to have the sense of a magical world that you get to go to with your family and find stories told in a fantastical way that are instantly relatable.
Come the fuck on.
It's an American horror story that the whole family can watch.
Ah, really what he said?
Yeah.
Fuck, that sucks.
On the subject of Herman, Fuller noted, the character is essentially a zombie in a constant state of decay, and he's married to a woman who doesn't age. There's something very poignant there. No, there's not. It's weird and stupid.
You had already told me how much it pissed you off.
Yeah.
And then the first thing I see is written by Brian Fuller.
Oh, yeah.
Who I am a huge fan of. Just about everything that he's done that I've watched, I have loved. When he was like 9 or 10, he somehow got a hold of Anne Rice's manager's phone number and bothered this woman for months until she finally connected him with Anne Rice. And he, as a kid, writing these stories and just being a huge fan of her novels, got to talk to Anne Rice, who I guess like at the end of the conversation was like, well, it was very nice to talk to you. Please don't ever call us and bother us again.
There you go, kids. It pays to bother people.
I, too, really love Brian Fuller. I'm a huge fan of Pushing Daisies. And this really, to me, feels just like an extension of Pushing Daisies in many ways.
It feels like a transition between Pushing Daisies and Hannibal.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Hannibal could have had as fleshed out a style as it does without this, possibly.
So you think maybe this was like a testing ground for some ideas or some...
I think it could have been or would have been.
Hmm. Yeah, because it's what, a year or 2 years before the first season of Hannibal started airing, I believe?
And like 2 years after the last season of Pushing Daisies.
Yeah.
One of the things I noticed immediately was the music in Mockingbird Lane is by Jim Dooley, who also did Pushing Daisies music.
Oh, really?
And it is very similar. It's very of a piece.
Were you a fan of Dead Like Me, Brad?
Yes. Fuller was only involved in the first few episodes of that, but it definitely retained a lot of his stamp the whole time.
Yeah, definitely. It has a very similar feel to Pushing Daisies. I have not watched either in quite some time.
And the director is Bryan Singer?
Ah, yes. Yes.
I think he's a fairly bland director. He wrote a lot of X-Men movies.
The Usual Suspects is his first one that he's like best known for. And then, was best known for until the allegations of him being a Hollywood pedophile.
God, until the documentary Open Secret came out to very little fanfare, and it's kind of hard to find.
And I say again, can we do this podcast one time without having to talk about a pedophile? What is the gravity well that pulls us into having to talk about that? Is it just Hollywood?
At the time, Bryan Singer was a hell of a get for this fucking pilot, let me tell you.
Oh, absolutely.
Kind of glad they didn't go to series.
Mockingbird Lane just takes everything that the original Munsters was doing and squats over it and just takes an enormous fucking shit. Just an unending river of shit.
An unending river of beautiful shit. Very good looking shit.
Instead of having a family that looks like monsters, but is in fact not, they're now horrible people who know exactly what they are and have no qualms about murdering and destroying the lives of innocent people, including Marilyn, who is particularly callous about the bloodthirsty needs of her family.
I think that's entirely fair.
Yeah, she is ice cold.
She does her best to defend Scoutmaster Steve against Grandpa. Not her fault that he dies, nonetheless.
That's true. She pushes him down the stairs.
Push is a strong word.
She does kind of push him down the stairs. It's not her fault that her grandfather can transform into some sort of naked mole rat bat beast creature.
I don't feel like I'd ever would say this sentence, but why is there so much naked Eddie Izzard covered in blood?
There is so much nudity in this entire thing. It's very horny.
Yes, yes.
It falls into the worst category of anything. It is a pointless, edgy reboot.
Yeah, it's just trying to be epic. I mean, it's very much a product of its time.
I'm so glad this is just a pilot. It restores a sliver of my faith in humanity that we all took one look at this and collectively said, no, you will not do this to the monsters. We will not let you, Bryan Singer and Bryan Fuller, two fucking Bryans of...
The Bryans.
Yeah. Oh, God, me too. That would be such a fucking bummer. I do love Bryan Fuller.
Hey, I love me some Bryan Fuller. There are some things that I enjoy. I love the sequence with the scouts. Once I could get past the fact that, like, you know, Bryan Singer was the one behind the camera filming.
On Friday, October 26th, NBC invites you to an all-new Halloween event. The Munster family is moving in for an entirely new experience.
My grandpa's gonna eat you.
Kids.
Mockingbird Lane, the Friday before Halloween.
It aired October 26, 2012. Supposedly, if it got good ratings, they were gonna make it. But yeah, we know that's never the case. They had already passed on this. They never put anything on TV that they haven't already greenlit. I personally think ratings don't matter. I think ratings are just something they show advertisers. Because they let things die that have great ratings, and they keep stuff on that have terrible ratings.
Bryan Singer.
I believe it's personal agendas behind the scenes that get things greenlit, and has nothing to do with ratings.
Yeah, if you're going to put it on TV as a series, you've already decided that. And I think they knew that they could get some buzz around this, but I think they knew that it was not going to be enough buzz to say, yes, we want to go ahead and make a series out of it. Like I was saying, they actually put this on Hulu very shortly thereafter, just so people could continue to watch it. And, you know, there's no harm, no foul in there. It's not costing them anything to put it on Hulu, I'm sure.
Exactly. Hulu needs content, and so they put it on Hulu.
Hulu was kind of pathetic back then, but it did have all this NBC stuff.
Is it still on Hulu?
No, it's not. It's not even on Peacock.
We were once again over on Daily Motion, which is a dumping ground for abandoned media.
Dumping is a good word, yeah.
Yeah, it is a dump.
And an almost completely unusable user interface.
Yes, yes.
It's almost like it's hard on purpose so things can kind of hide.
Yeah, yeah.
Daily Motion doesn't bother with view counter, so we don't know how much this was viewed. It's up in three pieces, and it's been up since the day after it was broadcast, since October 27, 2012.
Really? Interesting.
Why is Daily Motion?
So it's hosted out of Europe. If I remember correctly, it used to be dailymotion.co.uk or something, and they don't have to bother with a lot of the copyright law, I guess.
I swear, for the longest time, I thought Daily Motion was only for porn.
I did too. I did too. There was a lot of bootleg porn on there for a long time.
Really?
Weird Polish shit.
The account that this is on is actually a account of someone who, they really love Ellen DeGeneres. The entire account is nothing but clips from her talk show and a link to a blog that posts full episodes every day. And it was up to date when I checked.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness. All right.
Is it a Blogspot website?
Wait, hold on. So the account has this and a bunch of Ellen DeGeneres shows.
Yeah. Can you guess why?
Is this Portia de Rossi's account?
Well, I don't know if it's her account, but it's someone, it's a big fan. But I think that's the connection, is because she is married to Ellen DeGeneres.
They're still married?
As far as I know.
Gotta be rough.
One thing I did not research before coming in here.
Yeah.
In order to play Lily Munster, your middle name has to be Duh.
Ah.
That's a good rule.
There's not going to be any breakfast tomorrow because somebody ate all of our breakfast food. Would anybody like to say anything?
We all know who it was. Wallace has had a serious eating disorder. We've all ignored it.
First scene, we're sitting around a campfire with a bunch of not Boy Scouts. Can't use Boy Scout, that's trademarked.
No, no.
These are wildlife explorers. Weren't both of y'all Boy Scouts?
I was a Boy Scout, yeah.
Yeah, I'm an Eagle Scout.
Oh, really? Damn.
When you guys went on camping trips, generally you just sat around the fire in Class A uniforms, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't remember wearing our scout uniforms when actually.
No, we never did. I don't, except maybe at the big scout camp meets.
The jamboree.
Yeah, the jamborees and whatnot. Yeah. We would wear them, but.
I mean, this is kind of a silly trope that you always see is Boy Scouts are on a camp out and they're all wearing their full uniform.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And they're all cleanly pressed like they haven't done shit all day.
Yeah, they're not little kids who just love to roll around in the mud.
I can't figure out who the scout leader is.
Isn't he from Mad TV or something?
I recognize him, but I could not figure how he is, and he's not on IMDb.
I know he's in a bunch of commercials.
Interesting.
Sorry, actor.
He's a famous actor. Hold on. I'll look it up.
You look it up.
Revisit that.
So he is saying that they don't have any breakfast because someone is getting into the food and eating it all.
And then we start fat-shaming the kid.
No one's ignoring anything, Huey.
Well, someone gave him an honors badge and personal fitness.
So right off the bat, we lean right into fat-shaming. So great job, writers.
And Wallace wants to throw down.
I saw you hiding in the tall grass eating a box of Colonel Crunch.
He called you out.
That was my Colonel Crunch. Wasn't me.
Everyone continues dogpiling on poor Wallace. And then there's some mysterious force starts attacking them from the darkness.
Did you really think you could make us believe there was some mysterious wild baby bear out there in the forest eating all our sugar cereal?
And then they all scatter into their tents for safety.
Yep.
Including one camper who, for some reason, is hopping around cocooned in a sleeping bag.
Oh, like you've never been unable to get out of a sleeping bag.
Well, again, when you were camping as a Boy Scout, did you sit around the campfire in a sleeping bag?
I wasn't a sleeping bag child. I mean, but they exist.
Sleeping bag child.
All you really need in order to be a sleeping bag child is just to have a sleeping bag zipper that won't unlatch. That's all. And you're trapped in there, and that's your identity. Now.
I knew a kid when I was a teenager that still slept in a sleeping bag every night.
How's he doing now?
He has maybe the worst PTSD I've ever seen from going to Iraq.
That took a dark turn, man.
I know.
Okay. So I was waiting for this kid in the sleeping bag to, you know, get the Jason treatment and to just start getting slammed against a tree.
But in this one, it is not a kill. He just goes, ouch.
They throw the kid and we hear him say, ouch. And I'm thinking maybe to get around the censors. I don't think you can just murder a kid outright on network TV.
Well, you couldn't in 2012.
Thank God.
They do make it very clear that no scouts were permanently harmed, except perhaps for PTSD.
We finally see this is some kind of hairy wolf creature. Mm-hmm. And poor Wallace is now treed, and a candy bar falls out of his pocket in front of the beast.
Yeah, the fat kid is now in jeopardy because of his snacks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's fat. I mean, that's the lesson here.
I spent most of my life in jeopardy because my snacks and treats.
So then they cut to an enormous full moon over the horizon and the silhouettes of the running children pursued by a howling wolf man. And then we cut to the next morning. All of the children in the Scoutmaster are cramped in a pickup truck. And you can see Wallace is sitting in the front seat. So he got away. And right next to him is the kid. I don't know if we talked about it. There was a kid who was sitting in his tent and we see him get ripped out and pulled into the woods.
with the entire tent.
He's just sitting there in the truck. It's nothing happened.
Yeah, so they're all okay.
There is a sign you can clearly see in this scene that is the only indication of where we are.
Mercury Springs?
Cata Dean National Park. And it looks really good. It's the correct classic yellow and brown colors of the National Park Service signs. And there is a real Mount Cata Dean, which sets this in Maine.
Oh.
However, interestingly enough, it was not a national park until 2016, 4 years after this show.
Interesting.
No doubt this show inspired a groundswell of demands to make Cata Dean a national park.
That's right. It did all the heavy lifting.
It was the only good to come out of this show.
Brian Fuller wrote the legislation.
And I want to point it out because it's the only thing in this entire show that I like.
What?
I think this sign looks really good.
Oh my god.
So good job, whoever made that sign or computer animated it. It looks excellent.
I will tell you, I loved the opening scout scene. I thought it was the most Brian Fuller-y scene that I've seen since Pushing Daisies. I enjoyed the humor of it. I enjoyed the playfulness of it. I enjoyed how close it came to darkness and didn't go all the way. It felt like one of the opening scenes of Pushing Daisies to me.
Is it still out there?
They're all crammed in this truck, and they've been waiting all night to see if the monster would go away. And I'm not sure why they didn't just drive away, because they're in a vehicle. One of them says,
"Where's Eddie Monster?"
It is a little disappointing that it took them that long to realize that he was missing.
That's true.
I would like to think that my own scoutmaster might have been a little more on the ball than that.
They certainly had a way of finding you when you were trying to get away. I'll tell you that. Mm.
One adult is not enough for this many children. There should have been at least two or three more leaders there.
Brian Singer was there behind the camera.
I did not know what you were telling me about him when I wrote this, but we pan over to a presumably naked and dazed boy, Eddie Munster, standing in the bushes. And yeah, so we've got a naked boy.
Don't get me wrong. The only reason that I find that creepy at all is because of knowing who directed this episode.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely, 100%.
There wasn't anything creepy about it until you told me. I didn't research him that well. Ugh.
I never made you watch An Open Secret.
No.
I love to make people watch that documentary.
When Bohemian Rhapsody came out, he wasn't even at the Oscars. You weren't even aware of why that was.
I never saw Bohemian Rhapsody. I didn't care about it. And I can't remember the last time I watched the Oscars. These are not things on my radar.
The last time I watched the Oscars was when Seth MacFarlane hosted. And I swore I'd never watch again.
Oh my God.
Because he was so good at it.
We saw your boobs. We saw your boobs. In the movie that we saw your boobs. Meryl Streep, we saw your boobs in Silkwood. Naomi Watson, Mulholland Drive.
I would agree with that.
He was pretty good. I'm not going to lie about it.
After that, they were just like, well, we just don't need a host anymore.
Yeah, it was weird. Bring back Billy Crystal.
So the next thing we get is the dated-looking logo with the terrible smoke. With the reimagining of the classic Munsters theme.
Mm-hmm.
I think it looks terrible. It makes me mad. I don't like it. That's all I got to say about it.
They've got that same in-camera effect that we were talking about, 1775. That solarized. It looks bad. It looks very bad.
Oh, yeah. That looks terrible. It looks like shit you did on your computer in the 2000s.
Yeah, when you first pirated Adobe Photoshop in 2002.
The next thing that happens, for some reason, we get this stylized frame that says for sale at the top and a picture of the real estate agent and it says Mockingbird Lane. And in the corner, it says
1312 Mockingbird Lane.
1312?
Yeah, so it's the house right next door.
No, the house across the street is 1313.
Oh, right, yeah. Right. Okay. That makes more sense.
And in the corner, it says Mockingbird Heights Realty. I have no idea what this is supposed to be. Is this a title card for the act? Because there isn't another one.
No.
Is it supposed to be a stylized real estate ad? It doesn't look like one.
It is random and forgotten.
Completely pointless, and doesn't happen again. So then after that happens, we hear a man say,
"May I ask why the sudden move?"
"No."
And then the photo clears and the frame zooms out of frame and we see it's a platinum blonde woman working with a real estate agent who is puffing up this house they're about to go in.
It's an emotional property, ideal for any multi-generational family.
We're not just any family.
Well, the sun shines more on this house than any other house in the neighborhood.
Not a feature we're looking for. What about that one?
And she turns around and sees a dilapidated Victorian mansion.
Which does look pretty cool.
I was going to say the same thing, Brad. It looks pretty fucking sick.
We can clearly see the Golden Gate Bridge behind it.
Cool bridge.
Oh, yeah.
And I was actually able to find what I believe is this spot on Google Earth.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Let me guess. It's worth $189 million.
No, it's worse than that. This is taken from the Golden Gate Observation Deck. This entire area is a national park.
Oh.
Like, there are no houses there.
Is that Golden Gate National Park?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just right across the bay.
That's cool.
So they are moving from Maine to San Francisco.
Long drive.
The former owner was a notorious serial killer who poisoned hobos.
I'll take it.
She asks about this dilapidated house, and the agent tells her it's a murder house.
Yeah, the owner drugged and murdered hobos. Is that what he says?
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Miss, there may be dead homeless people in the walls.
Damn, that's so fucking funny.
And then she says,
and they found a home after all.
God.
She, as a character, is the most Brian Fuller character in this show. Her dialogue is so stylized, it reminds me very much of, like, well, basically everybody on Pushing Daisies.
She's played by English actor Charity Wakefield, and I only know her from The Great. She came out in 2020, and it's a fantastic show about Catherine the Great. Intrigue in the Tsarist court. Can't recommend it enough, and she is good in it.
Interesting. Oh, good. That sounds cool.
Good, because she's not particularly good here.
No one is.
But I did have written down that she's probably, like, the hottest person in the most manufactured way I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's surreal.
So then we cut to a silhouette that looks like an awesome Frankenstein's monster.
Right, but it's now.
No, it's just Jerry O'Connell standing in front of a street lamp.
You expect a classic Frankenstein.
It's exciting.
But instead, you get the most generic looking man that has ever acted.
He has a scar on his neck, and that's his whole costume.
I have always liked Jerry O'Connell. You know, I was actually a fan of Sliders when I was like 20 years old. Sliders. Fun.
I forget about Sliders.
Sliders that we must say, which is not
Doorways.
No, it's not. You know, I related to him because I was a Husky kid, and he was the Husky kid in Stand By Me.
Oh, forgot about that.
He grew up buff and handsome.
Just like you, Brad.
Yes, just exactly like me in every conceivable way, including my marriage to Rebecca Romijn.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that, Brad. Why haven't we had her on?
She hates podcasts.
She doesn't like podcasts.
Yeah.
Well, in this show, he is terrible.
A little robotic.
He displays the acting range of a 2x4.
Atrocious.
Every scene he is in, he's just standing around with his hands in his pocket and a smirk on his face, delivering his lines as flatly as possible.
Very vaguely lurching, like he cannot commit to being Herman Munster.
Yeah.
The gulf between the talents of Ed Gwynn and Jerry O'Connell was so wide, it was impossible for me to accept Jerry O'Connell as Herman.
No, he's not.
He's not even particularly tall.
He's got to be like 5'10", if that. Yeah. Fred Gwynn was fucking 6'5".
Yeah.
Which is huge for that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Fred Gwynn was wearing lifts as well.
Yeah, those big fucking platform boots.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Jerry O'Connell, if he wears a scarf, can pass for a normal human anywhere he goes.
He just kind of blends in. It really is a nonsense decision to have someone without a whole lot of personality play that role.
It already smells like home.
Jerry O'Connell and Marilyn and Eddie, who is still wearing his scout uniform, are all walking around the empty house they just purchased, which looks pretty good for a building that was supposed to be condemned and torn down.
Yeah, they just love tearing down anything that's more than 10 years old, though.
Oh, this must take place in Austin.
Tear it down, build a condo. A missing middle. So Eddie says,
this whole move was very abrupt.
Then we learn that they have told him that a baby bear he doesn't remember attacked him.
Be glad you don't remember. It ravaged and tossed your naked body into the shrubs.
And they are afraid that the baby bear will come and find
him. And that baby bear is still out there.
It's a far fucking way to move away from a single bear. I mean, in Legends of the Fall, which I just watched for the first time the other night, they live in the same area as the bear that attacks him as a kid. They never bother moving. They're just like, it's, you know, one fucking bear.
He just locked the
door. How close could he get?
But he doesn't buy the story at all.
Ooh.
He asks,
did Grandpa try to eat somebody again?
Yeah.
So he is aware of the odd nature of his family and the fact that his grandpa's a murderer.
They're all completely aware.
Fucked up part of it is that he knows that his family are monsters, but he doesn't suspect shit when he's in the woods and a baby bear, quote unquote, goes fucking ape shit on a group of scouts. Has no further questions. Just, that's a baby bear, whatever.
Other issue I have, for some reason, this show thinks vampires are cannibals and they are constantly talking about vampires eating people. They don't eat people. They suck their blood and turn them into their blood slaves. It does happen, but not in the way that this show depicts.
Yeah, if there's anything we've learned in the last 10 years of American politics.
So they're standing in front of a grand staircase. And for no reason, Eddie climbs up and pulls on the beak of a vulture statue on top of the newel post. And that opens up a trapdoor under the steps, revealing another staircase down.
Which, of course, is de rigueur for monsters. You gotta have the hidden staircase thing.
You do, yeah.
Thing that happened in the other show. That's all it is.
It's very cool, and we'd all go apeshit if we had that in our homes.
If you were in the media and a serial killer was caught and in his house he had that, you'd be pissing your pants to get that story. Oh my god.
So then Eddie flips a coin down there. Then he continues having this scene with Jerry O'Connell about his quote-unquote condition, why they moved, how he doesn't want to be a weirdo.
But I like being normal, like Marilyn.
Don't say that in front of Grandpa.
One of the things I observed, or really remembered, about the original monsters is there's no lore, really. There was no origin story, there is no setup, there's no vampire world, werewolf world out there that they represent. They're just their own little capsule. And I'm sure that if this went to series, they would have had to have come up with something for a modern audience. But it feels very much like Fuller here is trying to emulate that same kind of sui generis, kind of like, they only exist in this little space in the world. There's no larger storyline, or he just doesn't want to lock anything down in this first episode, and that feels lazy to me.
So you think maybe further down the line they just like come across like a colony of werewolves, a colony of vampires kind of thing?
I think they would have had to have come across some kind of story, but I think that that's what Fuller is trying to avoid here.
I feel like this show was going down the trail of silly backstories for dumb things that were mentioned in the original show. Like they would bring in the car, but it wouldn't be a cool Dracula, Ed Barris car. They would bring in some really boring, you know, sports car, and that would be the Dracula.
Yeah, it would be a McLaren F1 or some shit, or P1.
Cut to sliding doors in a solarium that's like full of vultures, and Marilyn is going in, and remember, she's supposed to be the normal one. She's looking at one of the birds and whistling the theme song for some reason, and then that's just over.
Yeah, that's all that scene was.
Like, what? I feel like they were trying so hard to make the Munsters the Addams Family.
Yeah.
And that's what this scene felt like to me. It looked like an Addams Family set.
That is a good call.
Morticia and her, like, plants stuff.
That was a great little thing.
Now we're outside. A delivery van is pulling up to the back of the house. Two delivery drivers are speaking Spanish and unloading two large crates. They think it is ice cream.
Fools.
Then something is moving inside the box, and one of them drops one side of it, and a bunch of terrible CGI rats come out.
That's the worst.
It scares the two men, and they get in the truck and speed away.
We joked earlier that they should have done all in-camera effects like Coppola did with Bram Stoker's Dracula, but if they had done this, it would have looked a lot better.
Yeah.
If they could manage to train a bunch of rats to climb together, and then somehow do a double exposure that would bring Eddie Izzard, that would be awesome.
They probably could. Rats are very trained.
The rats form a naked Eddie Izzard.
In age makeup.
Bad age makeup.
Oh god, yes.
They can't even handle just old age makeup.
Trusty ass flabby.
The makeup in this is just... It's like they put fucking Elmer's glue all over his face. And a little bit of his chest.
I actually did a lot of research on the makeup from the original show. They had the Westmore family.
Sure, yeah. Michael Westmore, a very famous makeup guy.
Oh.
This was Percival Westmore. Very famous. They have a star on the Walk of Fame. Mm-hmm. Did the makeup for the original show. And in this, they can't even fucking do old age makeup.
Yeah, Eddie Izzard looks pretty terrible here. At least until the later scene.
Yeah.
Eddie Izzard has long been one of my very favorite comedians.
He's great.
Oh, yeah.
She, yes. Since last year.
Did not know that.
Wow.
Yeah.
I knew that she had been talking about reconciling with the term transvestite for a little while and realizing that it was more on the transgender spectrum than she had originally thought.
Yeah, that's my understanding. And she's also made it clear that she doesn't object to he, him. She just uses she herself.
Sure.
Huge development.
I heard Eddie Izzard on The Tonight Show one time tell Jay Leno that she considered facial hair to be man makeup. And I was like, wow, that is a really interesting take on that.
I've always kind of considered it that as well. I mean, I grew my beard when I was 19 in order that I might look older and get into bars. And back then it worked. So, wow. Hey, cool.
I grew mine because I was 350 pounds and had a massive double chin.
Oh, yeah. You wanted to have a jaw?
Just trying to obscure it any way that I could. Yeah.
We can still talk about Grandpa as a man.
As the character.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to do a control F and change all of these. Marilyn comes out and tells him,
Grandpa, cover yourself. What will the neighbors think?
The neighbors should be more concerned with what I'm thinking.
Really creepy. His performance reminded me a lot of Matt Berry in What We Do in the Shadows.
I became a vampire to suck blood. And to fuck forever.
There are a lot of What We Do in the Shadows vibes, like, all throughout this.
Yeah.
It's actually a good show that's successfully showing vampires living in the modern world and what that would be like.
Albeit much more vulgar than the monsters probably had license to be.
It's hard to do a show about vampires and not have murder and killing.
And cussing and sexual innuendo to a degree that this couldn't get to, I suppose.
This was still an NBC show, yeah.
Yeah.
Then a bunch of dust comes together into a naked woman, and she puts her hand up, and we get this pointless CGI sequence where spiders descend from above and wrap her up a spider web dress.
And I'll say again, apart from the execution, which I thought was awful, I thought that was a really kick-ass concept. That's kind of metal right there.
Sure, it's a fun it's a fun concept, but it's pointless. Like, she only wears it for 15 seconds.
There probably is something like it in, like, Sandman, the comic book series. I probably would have lost my fucking shit, you know? Yeah.
She's a vampire. Do vampires control the spiders?
They control all kinds of shit.
Okay.
I know that's
but
right.
Anyway, Portia de Rossi's appearance here is even more disappointing than Jerry O'Connell's.
That's true. Yeah.
Whereas Jerry O'Connell has barely any nods to his Frankenstein nature, Portia de Rossi has none.
She doesn't do any.
They didn't do the Lily Munster hair. They gave her no apparent weirdness about her at all, except for what she does, which is like levitate and command spiders.
She's played by Portia de Rossi, who's probably best known from Arrested Development, where she was Lindsay Bluth.
Fiunque.
As we mentioned before, she's married to Ellen DeGeneres. And so she and Herman see each other.
Hello, Lily.
Hello, Herman.
And they immediately go to their room and fuck.
Despite having no chemistry whatsoever.
Yeah, there's nothing there.
They want to go for a Gomez Morticia thing, and they fail.
Because that's impossible to replicate.
Yeah.
I have never really been a fan of the relationships that happen in Brian Fuller's work, except for in Pushing Daisies, where notably the characters cannot touch each other.
Hmm.
So there's this real sexual tension that gets generated there, and I've never seen any sexual tension felt in any other thing that Brian Fuller has done, except of course between
Will and Hannibal.
Will and Hannibal on Hannibal. Yeah, that goes without saying.
That's next level horny. Anyone that hasn't watched.
Portia de Rossi and Jerry O'Connell have nothing of the kind.
No, not at all.
We get to see the aftermath of their lovemaking session.
He busted a load so hard that she got stuck up against the ceiling. Insanity.
That monster dick.
It blew off her spider dress, and now she's wearing a Victorian dressing gown.
Yeah.
And laying on the ceiling above him. And then for no reason, she turns into dust and she's on the bed with him. And Jerry O'Connell is laying in the bed shirtless, revealing the giant zipper on his chest.
I love the zipper.
You like the zipper. Okay.
The zipper is ludicrous. And I mean, to an extent, you have to go ludicrous with some elements of this nonsense.
I agree.
And I thought the zipper was suitably ludicrous.
A lot of the like set dressing, like the zipper and ultimately his heart, it sort of reveals what was going on in 2012 as far as like people thinking steampunk was going to be like the next big thing.
Yeah. He's got a steam valve in his heart. I love that.
Yeah.
I wonder if this would have happened sooner if I breastfed.
I have to assume you're talking about Eddie.
Evidently, it's important.
Lily is clearly an ageless being of some sort and is still having a regular, like, upper middle class white person guilt over not breastfeeding enough.
Mothers who breastfeed are closer to their babies. It's a fact. A suckling baby changes the mother's brain and makes them love harder.
You couldn't love Eddie any harder.
I could have if I breastfed. He was just so pink and plump.
We have to stop thinking of him as fragile and or edible.
There's this weird reoccurring joke where Lily is worried that she may be tempted to eat Eddie for some reason. Like, she just can't control herself.
He just looks so delicious.
Like a ham?
They decide to let Grandpa talk to Eddie about his becoming a werewolf. And we also find out about Jerry O'Connell's broken heart that he loves too hard with.
Be careful, Harmon. You love too hard.
That's so Brian Fuller.
We are constantly told that he just loves so hard.
You, especially Brad, know just from having watched Brian Fuller stuff, that would have come into play so much later on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he displays the quiet passion of a cinder block.
He does.
We cut to the next morning, breakfast time, and this is an important scene because we see all of the characters together interacting for the first time, and it mirrors a lot of similar breakfast scenes from the original show. There are so many things about this scene that I hated. All of the dialogue in this show it's coy, it's snappy, sarcastic.
We will talk about it later.
We will talk about that later.
We will talk about it later.
What are we talking about now?
What are we talking about now?
I just found it obnoxious.
Yep. Yes. That circular kind of dialogue with like, well.
Mm-hmm. It's in stark contrast to the way that the Munsters talked in the original show. You always had this naiveness.
Mm-hmm.
They were clearly removed from society, but completely oblivious to the fact that they're removed.
Right.
And in this show, it's completely the opposite. The Munsters are very much aware that they are apex predators of humanity and appear odd, but relatively normal to outsiders. The dialogue is usually outsiders not understanding that they are there to be their slaves and or food.
I also want to point out something about the breakfast scene. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
One of the items that they are eating is a Frankenstein-themed cereal.
That's right.
Which strikes me as odd. Wouldn't Harmon be horribly offended by that?
He wasn't born a Frankenstein.
I tried to find that cereal. I could not figure out what that is.
I believe it was probably created for the production.
Yeah, it's definitely fake.
Intended to be like Frankenberry, but they maybe couldn't get the rights to actual Frankenberry. I don't know.
Frankenberry cereal is coming your way. How about a monster for breakfast today?
But it also got me thinking, as the next couple scenes got me thinking, is Munster a race?
Oh.
Clearly, Grandpa believes that whatever that family is superior to human beings.
Oh, there's the Harry Potter crossover.
Voldemort, he's a Voldemort.
He's a wizard, and the regular people, they're muggles.
Yeah, yeah.
So it seemed to me, and actually, this theory I think was put in my head by whoever wrote the synopsis on IMDb, which is very horny and takes a lot of liberties.
Yeah.
So Grandpa and Lily are vampires, and Grandpa decided that nobody's good enough for his daughter, so he made a perfect man for his daughter to fuck.
Right.
So the man is picking out the dick for his daughter.
God. That really gives you some fucking cotillion vibes, doesn't it?
Yeah, isn't that what those Dradcath guys want?
I started thinking about like purity balls and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I couldn't quite make out the line, but Grandpa does say, like, the audio of this is absolutely terrible, but I don't really blame the producers. I blame Daily Motion. He says, like,
"You were never a monster until I made you a monster. Eddie was born one. Nothing you ever have done or can do as a parent that will change it."
Uh-huh.
I don't know what the fuck that means.
I don't know either. I'm going to read this because it's so funny. Grandpa Sam Dracula is essentially Dracula who assembled Herman because no man was good enough for his daughter, Lily, a sexy vampiress.
Sam Dracula.
I think there was a throwaway line that said that Sam was the name of Alois, but not in this.
Sam Dracula.
In fact, he tells people,
"You must call me D."
Yeah, he makes little cookies in the shape of the D.
Part of me thinks that his character in this was slightly inspired by the character of Alucard from an anime called Hellsing.
That's a deep cut.
I mean, it's not that deep. It was a fucking enormous manga and anime. He's obviously Dracula, but he's like kind of coy and he works with the police. And instead of like draining his victims by biting him on the neck, he like drinks blood out of like a blood pack from the hospital or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely gave off those kinds of vibes for me.
That sounds like a much cooler show.
It's a really good show. Check it out sometime if you like anime.
The world would be so boring without idiots like you to amuse me.
We're not gonna go down that road. So okay, And the other thing about this breakfast scene is the laziness in makeup and costuming is on full display.
It really is.
As I said, there were many breakfast scenes from the original, and you can literally clip any image from those scenes, and it would be an interesting picture, or at least intriguing. Even if you had never seen the show or knew what Frankenstein was or Dracula was or what the Munsters were. For this, other than the Franken cereal that we were talking about on the table, it just looks like any other multi-camera show. There is little to no indication that people are anyone remarkable or interesting. And this is all more incredible with the price tag, which was $10 million for this show.
The set design is grade A. And like their house is absolutely over the top. And looks very cool.
Yes, but is it really Munsters? It looks like a commercial, like a Backstreet Boys video to me. Maybe I'm just too picky.
I'm at least trying to, like, in my mind, separate out the ways in which this pilot is bad and the ways in which this pilot is not like the Munsters.
Yeah.
Okay.
You seem to have much more, like, connection to the Munsters than I do. I watched it. It was not really that into
it. Yeah, it was just kind of something that came on Nick at Night.
If it's something that you grew up with, there's that nostalgic, like, it will be a cold day in hell before I accept Steve Martin as my Sergeant Bilko.
Make the bad man stop.
God damn, that is a deep cut. Oh, by the way, Brad, earlier this week, Stuart thought that Sergeant Bilko was played by Kelsey Grammer.
A man who has "Welcome Aboard" tattooed on his penis.
Just thought you should know that.
Oh no, you're thinking of Down Periscope.
That's what I told you.
I got called out.
Welcome Abroad.
So the gist of this scene, without dissecting the shitty dialogue, is Eddie still wearing the scout uniform.
Why are you wearing that uniform?
We all have our uniforms.
It gives me structure.
He needs structure.
Is there something wrong with me?
That is exactly the kind of shame I do not want coming out of your mouth. The only one in this family who should feel shame is Marilyn.
No, something is up, but hasn't figured out what. And the family is coyly arguing who is going to tell him, even though I thought they'd already agreed.
Well, I wouldn't change a hair on your body, no matter where they may grow.
Are we having that conversation? I know all about puberty.
You see, he knows all about puberty.
I just don't want to talk about the changes in my body is going to.
He thinks that when they talk about the changes that are happening to him,
sure,
it's actually puberty. And he's like, doesn't want to talk about it.
And lycanthropy as a stand-in for puberty is a great, wonderful idea that has been done.
Teen Wolf.
Oh! Oh, no. Not again.
Anyone sees me like this?
Way better show. Yeah.
There was something more modern as well, wasn't there?
There was also a modern Teen Wolf show after this was on.
Well, Dad, there's a conversation that we...
You're not gay.
Well, I could be.
Not dressed like that.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. Yeah. Any good?
I have no idea.
I mean, it can't be Michael J. Fox surfing on top of a truck.
But I think there's plenty of a body of work wherein puberty is represented by some sort of supernatural change.
So the bus shows up and Eddie runs out to catch it, followed by Jerry O'Connell carrying books in a belt that Eddie forgot. Like he's a child from the 1930s.
Classic.
Very Wes Anderson prop.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's aggressively quaint.
And we're treated to a little bit of magnetic fields.
Yes,
which
we are.
Is cool to see in a network pilot.
But a little too on the nose.
Very on the nose. As Herman has a heart attack. I think
I
need a new
heart. I suspect someone just did a Google search and they found that song.
There's shit with heart in it.
I was going to check and see if it's the same company because I was like, oh, here's a song and we already have the license to it. So we can just throw that on.
Oh.
Jerry O'Connell turns around and we see inside his chest, his steampunk heart is going crazy and he collapses and we cut to commercial. Next scene, we are on top of the roof. It's a thunderstorm. Eddie is putting a lightning rod up, gets struck by lightning. We follow the CGI electricity down some wires into some electronic equipment that is behind Grandpa.
The equipment is suitably steampunk for 2012.
Mm-hmm.
It's no Frankenstein's original laboratory equipment, but it'll do. He's holding an iPad. We hear the Mac startup
yeah.
sound.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of funny.
Of all of the gags in this, that one's the one that took me out of the show the most.
Oh, really?
That fucking Mac sound.
It made me giggle, and I don't know why.
It's weird. That was my threshold. That was where I went too much.
Brad, as an expert in Apple, which Mac startup sound is that?
Actually, they used to have a different startup sound for each model or group of models until about the Power Mac G4, which case, before they switched to colors and stuff, that they actually settled on a Mac sound that this continued to this day.
And is that the one that's used in this?
I believe that it is. They are so subtly different that I really can't tell a lot of the difference sometimes.
Oh, you get that Brian Eno in there, just adding a slight different tone.
Yeah,
exactly.
It most certainly is a guy like Brian Eno.
And also, the iPad is pretty prominent. Was the iPad new in 2012? I can't even remember.
Yeah, I think it was 2011 it came out, if I'm not mistaken. Steve Jobs was still around when it came out, and he died in 2011.
It seems like they must have gotten some Apple money because they're pushing it.
Oh, yeah, which is interesting because Apple has a longstanding policy, at least they're reputed to. I don't know what kind of truth is in this.
Working on Munster's pilot?
No, they don't want their products to be used by villains in movies.
Really?
Every villain uses an Android phone and a Windows PC.
That's just the truth of the world.
That's just like real life.
Now, Grandpa in this is not a good guy.
No, he's terrible.
He is a bloodthirsty, murdering monster.
Yeah.
And he still gets to use an iPad, which is interesting to me.
So somebody slipped that by the guys over at Apple.
Oh my God.
Oh, maybe Apple's the reason this didn't go to series.
Brad, you're too far down the rabbit hole.
I've broken this thing wide open, you guys.
We've got the documents and the evidence and the proof.
Okay, so Jerry Connell is laying there. His chest is filleted open, and he gasps back to life with the Mac sound. I kind of thought this was funny, too. I kind of like the nonchalance. It's kind of a fun idea. I think it was done poorly, but I like the idea.
Sure, I'm very nonchalant, personally, about my body breaking down.
Oh, Grandpa is standing over him, and he tells him,
"It seems you broke your heart. Shame on you for being so sentimental."
"It's my heart. It's sentimental by definition."
And he throws the heart in the trash?
Yeah.
And then Jerry Connell says,
Hey, that's my last original card. Put it back in.
The new mechanical heart doesn't feel like him.
So I guess when he was a man, he didn't look like Jerry O'Connell then.
He had a different face.
I guess they've been refreshing his parts.
It's like a 10-man situation where like the axe cuts off his leg and then eventually, you know.
I'm sorry, what now? The 10-man?
Yeah, that's how the 10-man became 10.
Oh.
Which enchanted his axe, and then it cut off his leg. So he went to the tinsmith and got a 10-leg.
Wow.
And then it cut off his other leg, and he got a, 10-leg. And pretty soon, he was all made of 10. And the tinsmith actually used the body parts that were the 10-man and the parts of a 10-soldier heretofore not known about until the 10-man of Oz.
Well.
Who had a sword that did the exact same thing. Cut off all his parts. So the tinsmith took the body parts of the 10-soldier and the 10-woodsman, put them together, and made a new person. And that new person fell in love with the 10-man's girlfriend that he could no longer love because he didn't have a heart.
Man, we are getting Oz-schooled here.
And friends, that is why you read the book and don't watch the children's movie.
So Grandpa picks the heart out of the trash. And it's like covered in like toilet paper.
Clean that up before you put it back in, mate.
Yeah, you might want to run that under some water.
That was the only part of this entire show that got a little chuckle out of me.
He's going to get a fucking staph infection.
He looks pretty good for being made out of dead people parts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could barely tell.
Yeah, he's hot as shit.
So he just like in one quick motion tickles Jerry O'Connell's nose, and then he yanks out the mechanical heart, slaps in the old heart back into Jerry O'Connell's chest cavity, and then just takes a staple gun and just clip, 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 and then slaps his thing shut.
You know why he tickles his nose, right?
Makes him sneeze.
Because your heart stops when you sneeze.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a fact.
I didn't know that. Grandpa's not even wearing medical gloves.
Oh, no, no. There's nothing sterile about this environment at all.
He used that hibiscus wash before he started. recorded this. I mean, it's unfortunate he touched his iPad, which is riddled with disease.
This is where we learn that Grandpa built Jerry O'Connell, which is, as we've said before, weird and gross in many ways.
Very weird. Very gross.
Psycho.
It's like the grossest thing of this whole show. They're talking about how Grandpa has experience raising werewolves.
My son Leslie was born covered in hair. I knew exactly how to raise him.
You hired nannies to raise him, and then you let him eat the nannies.
That's what they were hired for.
And I think they're playing kind of fast and loose with werewolves and vampires, which, I mean, I guess if you kind of go back to like vampire lore, I guess that's okay, because like sometimes vampires turn into wolves too.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does it in Bram Stoker's Dracula. He turns into that weird Wolfman thing.
Which is where my question of is monster a race comes from. The Dracula has some werewolf children. That's interesting, but there's no lore there.
I think that they're just vampires. And then the grandpa built a man for his daughter for whatever reason. And then they had a child that was a werewolf, which isn't that weird because there's kind of some werewolf vampire crossover. And they also say that Marilyn's parents tried to eat her. So Marilyn's parents are werewolves too. So maybe Marilyn just hasn't shown her.
Yeah, she hasn't covered her monsterness yet.
Or she's just got recessive genes.
Yeah. Or she has discovered her monsterness because she is really bloodthirsty. So in the next scene, it's the middle of the day. Grandpa is outside with Marilyn. So these vampires are daywalkers. Okay, sure, whatever.
Yep. Yeah. And this scene, he's really pulling the Bram Stoker's Dracula. That flowing red robe going up the stairs.
Yes.
I could have done with more of that.
Yeah, I could too. Sure. It's fucking beautiful. More men should wear long trailing robes.
I preferred it when the village was further away and we had a moat.
Best moats were made of good manners and filled with congeniality.
Then I shall make cookies.
And he just decides to make cookies.
Yeah.
We cut to what looks like an enormous coal-burning furnace where he is making cookies, and he is squirting his blood into them.
Pretty gross.
Yeah, it's weird. It's gross. I've never seen this in vampire lore, so I don't know where this comes from.
His blood also, like, congeals into a jelly and rises.
Yes. Yeah,
very weird.
But sure, fine, whatever. I'm willing to go along with all of this. It's fine.
Yeah.
Then he and Marilyn go ring the neighbor's door, and the woman who answers is sitting in an electric wheelchair with a corgi on her lap.
Very cute corgi.
Great corgi. This is Beth Grant. Mm-hmm. She's a character actor that usually plays busybodies, mm-hmm. so she is the perfect choice for essentially the Gladys Kravitz role for this show.
Yep.
And where I know her best from is Donnie Darko, where she plays a similar busybody, and she gives the best quote probably in any movie ever that I use all the time.
Sometimes I doubt your commitment to sparkle motion.
All right.
I've not seen that movie in nearly 20 years.
In this, it feels to me like she has some kind of suspicion right off the bat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically about vampires.
Yeah, she specifically knows there must be something intrinsically weird about people that would purchase and move into the hobo murder house.
And then show up on your doorstep wearing a robe and carrying a parasol. So she specifically says,
pardon me if I don't take any food from you or invite you into my home.
Who is it?
Hobo murder house!
And she packs away from the door and calls her husband.
Who then immediately does both of those things.
Yes. I also want to point out, this character showed up in both Wonderfalls and Pushing Daisies.
Ah,
interesting.
So this show takes place in those universes.
In the Fullerverse, yeah. Hmm.
Marilyn and Grandpa are standing there, and Marilyn introduces them.
My name is Marilyn.
Hello.
This is my grandpa, Grandpa.
Which would have been funny if it wasn't immediately ruined by him saying,
you must call me D.
For no fucking good reason.
Yeah. He should have said, you must call me Grandpa.
This is my grandpa, Grandpa. Joke over. Grandpa snapped him. The husband is paralyzed, and he and Marilyn have a little aside. He basically tells her that he didn't know that she was going to be living with them.
Marilyn, I adore you. I was the one that talked your mother out of eating you, but you cannot stay. Honestly, your mother wanting a baby and then wanting to eat that baby was just embarrassing. I'd rather not have all that rummaging through my head when I'm trying to have a drink.
He is a stone bigot. She didn't come out monster, so he doesn't want her there.
He's the vampire Archie Bunker.
She's a reminder of his failure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, don't you have a college to go to or go live at or, you know... You don't have something to do. So anyway, they have this little argument, and then they unfreeze Tim and tell him to invite them in. Because I guess...
Yeah, vampire thing.
Yeah.
You have to be invited in.
He says,
would you like to come in?
Can you, of your own free will, rephrase that as a statement?
Please come in?
Don't mind if I do.
Instead of, do you want to come in? It's, please come in.
Please come in?
Check, check,
check, check, check, check, boom,
check. After that, we cut to the Wildlife Explorers headquarters, I guess, and we get to meet Scoutmaster Steve.
It's a classic scout meeting where you get all your medals and you do all the funny little scout cheers, like the watermelon cheer. You know what I'm talking about.
Give us the watermelon cheer.
Well, it's visual. You put your hands like you're eating a big slice of watermelon. You go, nom, 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 nom.
I love it.
I love the costuming in this scout meeting.
I do too.
The ridiculous jacket that Scoutmaster Steve
Yes, that jacket is absolutely god tier.
It's a tan pea coat festooned with merit badges.
It's so good. And knowing Brian Fuller, that has got to be like camel hair. It's got to be like the softest fucking jacket you've ever touched.
And Scoutmaster Steve is played by Cheyenne Jackson, whom I really only know from 30 Rock.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he was the street artist who got hired as an actor on the 30 Rock. Canadian character, I have no idea where the actual actor's from.
I'd wager Cheyenne.
Newport, Washington.
Newport Jackson would be a terrible
I named my son after a cigarette.
So, okay, so he's wearing this amazing jacket, but he's also telling Eddie that their Wildlife Explorer uniforms are like superhero costumes.
The Explorer uniform is our superhero costume. This neckerchief is a cape. Those patches are the armor of experience and adventure.
They are very good neckerchiefs. Good pattern on them. Look sharp.
I like how the patches go down the back of his jacket as well.
Yes. All over the place.
So then Jerry O'Connell and Grandpa are standing there, and Steve asks about Jerry O'Connell's neck scar.
Oh, I like your necklace. Is that it? What is that?
It's a thing.
Then Steve tries to shake hands, and he says,
I have a disease.
So he won't even shake hands with a human being.
No, they're not even going to touch him.
Fucking thing.
Because there is food.
You don't shake hands with a cow.
No.
I would.
No, we should shake hands with beef.
I was thinking it and hoping not to say it, and then you said it. Shake hands
with beef. Then Steve gets a little concerned that Eddie's uniform doesn't have his old troop's number. And he pulls Jerry O'Connell aside to talk about it.
I'm not a suspicious person by nature, but I'm assuming there's a reason you don't want me to know Eddie's old pack number.
And he immediately tells him.
Well, Jerry O'Connell tells him that the troop...
Pack 110. He doesn't remember that night.
What does he remember?
Just what we told him.
Lies, master.
He knows there was a baby bear.
I don't remember the baby bear.
Baby bear.
Also, Grandpa and Eddie just sort of sidle up again and rejoin the conversation. So then, Lily shows up. We get the sequence where the doors open, the leaves swish by, the heavenly music plays, and Grandpa can suddenly see inside the chests of both Jerry O'Connell and Scoutmaster Steve.
Could your heart just skip a beat?
And their hearts are beating really fast.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's Portia de Rossi.
Someone forgot to tell them that she's married to Ellen. Is this supposed to tell us that Scoutmaster Steve is in love with Lily?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I believe that is exactly the only purpose of that.
Okay.
Or if not in love, let's just say lustful feelings of...
Of lust.
Yeah. Lustful feelings of lust. Yeah.
Missed opportunity. He should have been in love with Marilyn. That would have made way more sense.
Yep.
The heart wants what the heart wants, dude.
We come back from our commercial break, and we're back in the woods.
In a duck blind of some sort.
Grandpa, Marilyn, and Eddie are looking at a deer.
Yep.
They are explaining the circle of life, ostensibly so Eddie can earn a merit badge.
Are you sure there's a patch for this?
It's the circle of life badge.
A lion leaps out, kills the deer. We zoom in on Eddie's reaction to this. And then Marilyn tells Eddie,
sometimes deer want to be eaten. They're depressed and lonely, so that lion's doing the deer a favor.
which is really fucked.
She is really like setting him up to be a monster, which is an interesting choice for Marilyn.
Yeah.
There are some head fakes towards morality that happen that don't really end up panning out, or they end up getting diluted. Like, Herman is against killing Steve. Lily is, to an extent, against killing Steve.
Sort of.
And Marilyn tries in vain to defend Steve, but yet they are very clearly not really all that bothered by the carnage.
It's kind of treated like an inevitability.
Yeah, yeah.
Grandpa has come to terms with it.
Yeah.
He's fine with what he is. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
And the rest of them are kind of still on the edge.
The thing Grandpa wants you to know about the Circle of Life is that he happens to be standing outside of it.
Yeah.
We never really get a solid explanation of how old Grandpa is supposed to be, right? I mean,
they just say he's old.
The thing that Grandpa wants you to know about the Circle of Life is that he stands outside of it.
Yeah.
Apex Predator.
Yeah.
For sure. So meanwhile, Grandpa slides out of the shot.
Yes.
Like seemingly floating. And it's really funny because you see them kind of turn on because it kind of jerks and then he starts gliding away.
Yes, yes.
And then Eddie asks,
does anything eat the lion?
And at that moment, a giant CGI demon appears and attacks the lion.
It's nature.
And we get another shot of Eddie Izzard naked, covered in blood.
So my question is, where the fuck did that lion come from?
Where are they? Are they in a zoo?
It's a mountain lion. It is in North America somewhere.
Oh, was it a mountain lion?
Yeah, it was a mountain lion.
Oh.
Or a cougar or a puma.
Yeah, that makes more sense than it being a lion.
They do live in a national park.
Yeah, California is lousy with mountain lions.
We cut to Lily knocking on a wall and a coffin sliding out with Eddie.
Yeah, apparently that's where he sleeps, so...
He sleeps in a drawer.
They are in Lily and Jerry O'Connell's bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So Eddie sleeps in the wall in his parents' bedroom. Hmm.
He sleeps in a drawer, like Curly, is that his name? From The Simpsons, who has a son, and they pull his son out in the drawer, and he goes,
I sleep in a drawer.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
Was he in the drawer when they were fucking earlier and then had the conversation about what to do with him?
Yeah, no wonder why he's so awkward.
That is going to mess you up. I think lycanthropy is bad.
I hear your parents achieving orgasm.
I think this was actually in the original. I can't remember, but I think Eddie did sleep in a coffin drawer.
Yeah.
Pretty comfortable.
I mean, I don't know. How comfortable do coffins have to be? I mean, it's not like they get a complaint.
We give our best places to sleep to the dead.
That is so sad.
It truly is.
Eddie and then Lily, they sit on the edge of the bed and talk about Grandpa eating the lion. And Lily explains,
you wouldn't try to eat somebody, would you, Mom?
It would be natural if I did. It's in my nature to eat and not be eaten.
Yes.
They are still talking about the baby bear attack, and Eddie shouldn't hate the baby bear.
I don't hate that baby bear. It was probably hungry and confused.
That's exactly right. Baby bear, so confused it couldn't possibly know what it was doing.
This is terrible parenting. They go for this entire episode just trying desperately not to tell their son the truth about what he is.
Fucked up.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
They also start using the euphemism of Grandpa starting drinking again, meaning, of course, killing and sucking the blood of people.
Yes.
Not bad, yeah.
I don't know. That's a pretty good euphemism. Grandpa's going to start drinking again. Sure. That works.
It is weird to plan to start drinking again. As an alcoholic, I'll tell you, it just kind of strikes every once in a while.
We just got to get through this weekend.
When you go to AA, you start out by getting the one-day chip and then the week chip, month chip. But eventually you're getting like the negative 3-week chip, the negative 2-week chip. And you're like, oh, shit, I guess I got 2 weeks left. And then I start drinking again.
You've abstained long enough and now you get a binge jerk.
Yeah.
Now you're responsible to handle your vices. It just kind of happens.
Cut to outside. Grandpa is sitting in an ornate chair,
still day walking,
using an iPad with a feather quill.
Yes, which does not work.
He's playing the balloon pop game.
He has enslaved the neighbor.
He's turned the neighbor into a blood slave.
His blood slave.
And he's having him paint the house, and he's up on a ladder.
That was maybe my favorite delivery from Jerry O'Connell in the entire fucking show.
Oh, yeah.
Don't turn the neighbors into your blood slaves.
He says he's turned the neighbor we met into a blood substance and he doesn't like it. Secondly, he doesn't like how Grandpa is teaching Eddie.
You're being weird and confusing. You ate a lion while naked.
The lion was naked. It seemed polite.
And he's worried that he's losing touch with his son. This is also when he explicitly say they should kill and harvest parts from Scoutmaster Steve.
What would we tell Eddie?
The truth.
That I stole the heart of his wildlife pack leader that you exsanguinated.
First, they suggest that they're going to harvest the heart of the neighbor who fell off the ladder. Jerry O'Connell nixes that. No, I'm not going to take the heart from my neighbor.
We get this great line where Grandpa says,
well, it's not as if a brand new heart's just going to drop out of the skies, is it?
Yep.
And at that moment, the guy painting the house collapses and falls from two stories up. We get the paramedics where they're trying to restart the man's heart, and Beth Grant is there in her rascal scooter with her corgi, and she's just sobbing in front of them, and she says,
I don't understand any of this. I couldn't get him to sweep the front porch, and he works himself to death painting the neighbor's house.
She's not going to be the best person in this whole show.
Yeah, yeah.
She was actually emoting.
Eddie Izzard is good, but it's a very hammy performance.
All of his lines are just kind of land creepy. And like, no, no, no.
This was right after The Riches, I think. Did you guys watch The Riches?
I tried. I did not care for it.
It was not necessarily all that great, but Eddie was really good in it. I really enjoyed her performance, and it doesn't feel like she gives a shit at all about anything that's going on in this one.
Yeah, she's super good in Hannibal as well. I won't do any spoilers, but it's like late into the first season, basically through to the end. Although, as is always the problem with British people, they cannot do an American accent.
I do not have to convince you.
It always sounds the same. Very bad.
That's not untrue.
What's his name from The Wire who plays McNulty?
Dominic West.
Dominic West, yeah. Like, after finding out that he's British and rewatching The Wire, you just hear it slip out every once in a while.
Crikey, I was looking to get a little hanky-panky, and this one bloke gave me this number to call when I got across the pond.
Idris Elba was good, though, on that show.
Oh, well, he's fantastic.
I never thought he was British.
Grandpa is talking to her, trying to get her to eat one of his cookies.
Yeah. I am gluten-free!
And blood-free.
And she straight up looks at him and says,
shut up! Shut up!
This is pretty great. And the whole time she's just like,
why would you say that to me?
And then we get the great line, Grandpa.
Perfectly good heart. You called an ambulance.
Now we get the scene where they have invited Scoutmaster Steve to dinner.
I think it's Grandpa that has invited him.
He asks where Herman is when he comes to the door. And Grandpa's like, oh, he's around here somewhere. Come on in. Grandpa shows him in. And we find out that Scoutmaster Steve is alone in the world, a widower with no children or family.
It's a very sad story. His wife was barren, and she passed away.
She was cremated and entombed.
Old school, eh?
Cremated and then entombed in a mausoleum.
Laying it on.
Gosh, just kind of like the one that we're in right now. Anyway, then he tells Scoutmaster Steve that the reason why they invited him is because Jerry O'Connell has a bad heart, and he is worried about leaving his family without a father. Grandpa essentially asks Scoutmaster Steve to replace Jerry O'Connell.
You are a widower. Lily is almost a widow. A widow in waiting. A widow elect. Do not be angry with me for just thinking of the future. I'm simply asking you to think of a kindred spirit.
You think that he's talking about you dating his daughter. In reality, he's talking about murdering you and using your parts.
Open up your chest, your heart.
I cannot count the number of Seinfeld episodes that were like that.
George was always trying to rip people's hearts out. It was fucking weird, right? He just seemed like a normal, bald, fat guy. But he's a murderer.
They're sitting at the table. It becomes apparent that the rest of the family was not aware that he was coming.
I didn't mean for me to be a surprise.
I meant for you to be a surprise.
And there's a very coy, sarcastic conversation about why he is there. Lily and Jerry O'Connell excuse themselves to talk in the other room. Mm-hmm. Jerry O'Connell explicitly says to Lily,
why is that man in our house?
I was going to take his heart, and Grandpa wants to drink his blood.
Which makes it sound like Herman is on board with that at that time.
Yeah, he's complicit.
And Lily seems like she is not on board with killing him in the dining room or in front of Eddie.
That's her only concern.
Neither of those things will happen in the dining room tonight or in front of Eddie ever.
I agree. That should be our goal.
Not like Eddie isn't fully aware that this is what his grandpa does. It makes no sense. So they're still debating about how they're going to tell Eddie. And also, they talk about Jerry O'Connell's heart.
What's wrong with your heart?
I loved you hard.
He just loves so fucking hard with that heart. And it's just not going to last. He's just got to let up. We're just told and told and told that he loves and loves and loves. No, we don't really see it, but we're told about it. The only emotion I get off Jerry Connell in this is smirk. Whatever emotion that is. So we cut back to the table where Eddie announces that he is a vegetarian.
I don't eat meat.
Yeah.
Grandpa is not happy about that.
You're not having any vegetables until you eat your meat.
How can you have any pudding if you don't eat your meat?
Then Eddie looks at Scoutmaster Steve and says,
my grandpa's going to eat you.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Lily and Jerry O'Connell come back to the table and they ask,
Steve, this is always awkward to ask of a guest, even an unexpected one.
Do you want me to leave?
Which he is more than happy to do. Marilyn shows him to the door and tells him,
so nice to meet you. Yeah. Run.
The door opens and there is Grandpa in his giant fleshy bat monster form. Marilyn tries to stop him from eating Scoutmaster Steve.
Not CGI in this instance, but instead a really terrible looking rubber suit.
I think it's a mix because there is like a little bit of like not quite clipping, but that awkward motion of that era of CGI. It's definitely a rubber mask over his head.
I think Eddie Izzard is really in
there. Yeah.
Well, somebody's in there. It kind of moves like Eddie Izzard.
Yeah, you can see her eyes like working.
Yeah, and for no reason the trap door under the stairs opened. They've already established you have to pull on the vulture's nose, but that didn't happen. It just randomly opened.
Grandpa does like a little like come hither wave with one of his hands.
Uh-huh.
And I think that he's using some sort of spell to pull that eagle down.
Oh, okay. He's force sensitive.
Yeah. He knows magic missile and stone skin.
Okay, so he's a caster as well. Okay. Yeah. So he's a vampire who can also knows how to assemble a Frankenstein and also knows magic.
That's a lot, huh?
He's been around a while, man. He's like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day. He's learned a lot of skills.
He's the original polymath. He knew Leonardo da Vinci and taught him everything he knew.
Delta 9.
He ate Leonardo da Vinci.
We cut to the roof, and Jerry O'Connell and Eddie are talking about change bodies.
Yes, it's the puberty speech.
He tells him,
I already know about embarrassing dreams and growing hair in strange places.
What about growing hair everywhere?
Where else does it grow?
There was no baby bear.
What was it?
You.
Which is about the coolest news that like a 10-year-old kid could possibly get.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that any like 10-year-old boy, if your family was monsters, you would be wondering when you're going to be a monster. And when you finally did, you would be so excited.
Yeah, no shit, right?
It would be the greatest day of your life.
Yes. Oh my God, you're right. They should have taken it down the path where he's like super excited for like a specific birthday or something where he gets to find out what kind of monster he is.
Oh man, that is good.
Whether he's a Dracula or a Frankenstein or a Booberry.
Yes. Or a Chocula.
The spooky part of your complete breakfast.
So they have like the sorting hat, and they put it on his head, and they're like, you are an invisible man.
Oh, I was hoping for mummy.
Either invisible man or mummy. He's going to spend most of his life wrapped in toilet paper. That's pretty much your fate.
And that's actually what happened to Butch Patrick.
Wait, what happened to Butch Patrick? He became invisible?
No, he was an alcoholic for 40 years.
Oh, man.
He was in a show called Lidsville.
That was the H.R. Puffin stuff people, Sid and Marty Krofft.
Lidsville is the cookiest. Lidsville is the kickiest. Lidsville is the groobiest. Lidsville is the living
end. It's like H.R. Puffin stuff, except it's all hat
people. Rabbit hole to go down?
Is Lidsville, is that a reference, like a sideways reference to like Quaaludes? Or is there something else that I don't know about Lids?
Given Sid and Marty Krofft, I could not imagine that it's not an LSD reference, but...
Oh, okay.
Lids is very close to LSD.
Well, LIDS is a term that is used for, I think it's LSD.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that was like a drug term back in the day. It was like a LID.
Yeah.
Not if anybody should know this. It's me, Jesus Christ.
I don't really know. I was very, very, very young in the 70s, and I did not.
Listeners, send us an email. We don't know these things. We're fragile people.
We're square.
We're square and weird.
We need to be educated. As always, send us an email. The email is somewhere on our website or whatever. Go find it. Check out our web zone.
It's stuart.stuart@stuart.stuart.
There you go. Eddie is very upset.
I can't be a vegetarian werewolf.
You can be a vegetarian when you can help it, and when you can't, that problem will solve together.
I like how they kicked that can down the road another month, which was exactly what Lily was intending to do the whole time. We don't have to tell him. He's not going to suspect that the baby bear is him until there's a couple more baby bear attacks.
Also, I want to note, there's a full moon.
Oh my God, seriously?
Yeah.
It's right behind them.
I would say that's not full. It is approaching full, or perhaps it's...
Or waning, yeah.
Waning. I think it's waning.
It's just got like a little cloud in front of it.
Because they just moved a couple days ago, immediately after the baby bear attack. But actually, the timeline's all messed up, isn't it? It's clearly Scoutmaster Steve heard about the baby bear attack, and it had entered the realm of folklore.
National news.
You're right. The moon is totally wrong. They fucked up the moon.
They fucked up the moon.
Yeah, somebody gets fired for.
Oh my God! Can you imagine losing your job because you messed up the moon as a like set piece on a show that didn't go to series?
They're talking about what's going to happen the next time there's a full moon, and they're literally sitting under a full moon. That is like the most stupid fucking mistake you could make. Like you didn't even watch the scene. You were just like, it's a spooky thing, and of course it needs a full moon.
Yeah, of course.
So I had in my notes that. This was one of the classic Brian Fuller indulgences toward his own personality. In Hannibal, Hannibal wears these like very fancy suits, which Brian Fuller does in real life. But in this, he made Eddie Munster into a vegetarian, which famously Brian Fuller also is.
It's a fun idea. Mm-hmm. It's already been done very well in Count Duckula.
Yes.
Castle Duckula. Home for many centuries to a dreadful dynasty of vicious vampire ducks, the Counts of Duckula.
Much, much better show.
Duckula was awesome.
Man, fond memories of that and Danger Mouse.
Same company, the Thames.
Early mornings on Saturday on Nickelodeon.
Holds up.
Does it really?
Yeah, it's still really funny. Duckula definitely holds up.
Count Duckula.
This conversation is just, it's just too much for Jerry O'Connell's heart, and he just falls off the fucking roof and dies. Yep. There's just so much love.
He loved too hard, and then he paid the price.
That little counter on his heart is like a love counter, I guess.
Yeah, it's like a love meter. So we cut to the scene in Grandpa's laboratory where we see has both Jerry O'Connell and the dead Scoutmaster Steve laying on slabs. He has ripped out Scoutmaster Steve's heart, put it in Jerry O'Connell, and is drinking Scoutmaster Steve's blood. It looks like it's being pumped out of his body through that mechanical steampunk heart that we saw earlier.
Yeah. Yep.
It's just, it should be funny. This should be funny to me, and it's not.
And he offers a stip to Herman, who politely declines. The agency of Herman in refusing or accepting the heart is completely taken away.
Yeah.
And there's a song playing during this, and I didn't write it down, and I feel like an idiot.
It was a John Lee Hooker song, I feel like.
Okay.
It was some kind of blues song.
That's good enough.
Yeah, it's I'm a Man. Yeah.
Last scene, we made it. This is shortly later, I guess. We see another full moon, which again has no effect on Eddie.
True.
This has got to be a while later because Lily and Eddie and Jerry O'Connell, they're walking outside and Jerry O'Connell is now wearing a scout uniform.
Yes, he is apparently going to be the new scoutmaster.
Hell yeah.
He's like killed and replaced.
Because he has the heart of one.
There you go.
Seems like he'd be an all right scoutmaster if I'm perfectly honest.
Yeah, but he killed and replaced the old one, which is, just seems very unscouting.
You know what? You know what, Stuart? Nobody's nerfing.
That's very true to the BSA. That's how they do it. You have to kill the original Scoutmaster, and then you become the Scoutmaster. It's been a way since Robert Baden-Powell established the rules here.
I actually witnessed that ceremony at a scout meeting. It was beautiful. My old scoutmaster took his defeat with grace, and honor was preserved.
Yeah, the new scoutmaster will make a necklace out of the old one's teeth.
And his ears. It's
a beautiful ritual.
Oh, good lord.
You can't do it anymore in these, you know, PC times.
Yeah. No.
You can't make a necklace out of your rival's teeth because of political correctness.
Everybody's all woke these days.
Yeah.
You're going to get canceled if you make that teeth necklace.
They are talking about how Eddie now knows what he is and how he should deal with it. They're talking about support animals.
Think of it like that dog at your last school who could smell seizures.
And they tell him that they've gotten him a pet to watch over him when he becomes a werewolf next full moon.
Yeah, there is currently a full moon.
The pet is a dragon. Eddie says,
do I get to keep him?
Which is dumb because they just finished telling him that they had gotten him a new pet.
Oh yeah, Eddie is not the sharpest tool in the shed, man.
He really isn't.
No, definitely not.
He doesn't even have a widow's peak in this one.
Yeah, that's a grave oversight. Yeah.
The dragon roars and breathes fire as we mount on a full fucking moon. One last fuck you to the audience.
Yes.
And that is Mockingbird Lane.
That is Mockingbird Lane.
That is fucking boring lane.
But I do want to warn you all that the Munster saga does not end here.
Oh yeah, baby.
No.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, if you didn't like the dark and grittiness of this reboot, Stu, then you will not like to hear that Mr. Rob Zombie is currently working on a Munsters reboot feature film.
Yes.
Yes, and I think we can expect a great deal more darkness.
He is not shy about sharing his plan.
No.
He is basically sharing the entire process on Instagram.
Oh, really? Okay.
I mean, the man wrote the definitive television fandom song.
I don't actually know his music at all.
Through the ditches and burn through the witches. Huge hit in like 1999.
In 1996, I went and saw Rob Zombie and Korn in concert.
Yes, sir.
I have to tell you, Rob Zombie, that concert, it was the greatest concert I've ever been into in my life. And I don't know how it could possibly be topped. There was flames coming out of the stage and I was like not close to the stage and I could feel the on my face.
Wow.
I'm not a fan of Rob Zombie's music, but the man knows his aesthetic. He is using this as an opportunity to just wallow in his fandom.
When I saw him live, it was very early in the morning at Ozfest, and he was wearing like very light denim jeans and a t-shirt, and he had like kind of medium long hair. This must have been 2002 or 2003. Like, his jeans had patches sewn on them, like a big sunflower and like a hippie bus. It was very strange. Did not fit with everything else that I've ever seen him do or express any interest in.
Did he have the stage theatrics?
No, he didn't.
Wow.
Ozzy did.
Oh, okay.
This was one of the years where Ozzy played with the original lineup of Black Sabbath. Ozzy had like this rocket ship on stage set up on like a big mechanical arm or whatever. And at some point while Black Sabbath was playing, he got in it. He's got like full range of the stage. And he's like, y'all want me to shoot you? And he fucking hits the buttons and it is like a big water gun. Just like spraying all over the crowd. It was so cool.
Rob Zombie is essentially building all of Mockingbird Lane in Budapest right now.
Wow. In Budapest.
I'm looking at the Instagram right now. I see that he shared at least an early version of the Herman Munster prosthetic forehead, which looks very Frankenstein-y, very like old school Hollywood updated.
They should have just cast me for that. I've already got the forehead.
Also, the blueprints for the Munster house.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So the Munster's house is in Waxahachie, Texas.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, my wife has visited it at least one time.
That's fascinating.
That's like a replica of it. The real one is on the Universal backlot. They just redress it.
Oh, really?
It was used in Desperate Housewives. It shows up in movies.
Oh.
I think if you look up on Wikipedia, it's just called the Munster Mansion.
Very cool.
Rob Zombie directing the Munsters movie is kind of like Tim Burton directing Willy Wonka.
Which was a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But seemed like it was good on paper, though.
His aesthetic looked like it would work perfectly. Same thing with Alice in Wonderland, which I think we've talked about before, is actually the highest grossing Disney movie ever.
Oh, wow.
Which is bizarre.
At the time it came out and I saw it, I thought, you know, I would like this to go to series. I would like to see more of this. Looking back on it now, I'm glad that it didn't.
Ooh.
I think that we wouldn't have gotten Hannibal, for one thing, which I loved. I don't think anybody's career suffered for not being part of this as a series. Particularly Eddie Izzard. I think Eddie Izzard did not need this.
No,
not at all.
Jerry O'Connell did not need this. He's doing fine. We got a new new season of Lower Decks coming out next week. And I don't know anything about Charity Wakefield. Except you said she was in the Catherine the Great thing, right?
Right. And everybody in that is awesome. So no, I don't think anybody needed this. I definitely don't need it.
I found it to be a fun little experiment, if you will, but I'm sure I probably wouldn't have stuck with the show if it had been a series. It was kind of one joke. And the Munsters itself, kind of one joke show.
Yet, there is no joke here. It is just they're monsters and they're terrible people.
There is a joke, but it is much more of a meta joke than I like to see.
Yeah.
When Herman appears, as you noted, he's silhouetted against the porch light, which makes it look like he's got the squared head and the bolts coming out of his neck, and then he steps out of it to reveal what he looks like in this remake. That's a wink to the original that really is a red flag to me. If you're being cute about your relationship to the original, then I think you've lost the plot to start with.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Brad.
I didn't realize how precious I was being about the original until you guys pointed it out, and I totally admit that. But seeing something like that, it's like a fuck you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you like? Well, fuck you. We're not giving you that. We're giving you gritty and smart and pretty.
Sexy.
It abandons a lot of the ideas that I feel like were core to the original.
The lesson I want you to learn is it doesn't matter what you look like. You can be tall or short or fat or thin or ugly or handsome, like your father. You can be black or yellow or white. It doesn't matter. What does matter is the size of your heart and the strength of your character.
For that reason alone, I just hate it. Like, I don't know what else to say.
I get that.
That being said, as a standalone thing, it's not incompetent. Made. There's some stupid things that we pointed out, but it's not the worst thing ever if you were to completely ignore the original one.
No, if you're an interior designer, a set dresser, I think that this is, it's interesting.
You saw the $10 million. It was on screen.
Yeah, most of that was for Eddie, isn't it? She demands a pretty high salary.
Yeah, good set design, good costuming, but no.
When I was rewatching it today, I noticed the walls in there, I guess in the kitchen, they're like hand painted with like branches and this like nice slate blue background. That's very cool. It looks very beautiful to me.
And I really like that sign in the beginning.
I pass by those signs fairly often.
Good national park sign.
Well, it looks like the rain has stopped. Oh, look, the sun is coming out. We've actually been in here all night.
Oh, the framing sequence.
Yeah. Remember the framing device?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. Not the sun.
What?
Not the sun.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
No.
Guess Joe is a vampire all along.
I guess. I just hope his parents told him that.
He told me I was Mormon.